This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 is the bullpen here with the producers of ESPN Radio. Ourself, Brian McDonald, found on the X at Sack by BMAC. To my left, Andrew Carlson, found on the X at Carlson Radio. Sean Mapes, a member of the Paul Gallant Show, is at Sean A. Mapes on the X. And our man, Josh Chavons, behind the glass, is at I Am J. Chevy. The tone of this Google Doc we had for the show today took a different turn somewhere around, I don't know, maybe 7:30 last night. I don't remember exactly when it started to fall apart for Hunter Brown. But I was not expecting to come in and like lead with specifically Astros Padres right away tonight. I was going to be looking ahead to the division race and when can the Astros clinch and things are looking up. And then Hunter Brown and went and took a big old dump on the field last night. So let's start with Hunter Brown. The Astros and the Astros overall at home, I mean, this has kind of been a talking point. We probably won't have time to get into the whole batter's eye thing that was put out recently, but the Astros, with that loss last night to the Padres, I believe it was 11-2, are now 35-35 at home, were compared to 45-27 on the road. At home, they're averaging 4.49 runs per game, on the road 5.8, so drastically different across the board. Andrew, I mean, what, I don't know where you want to start it. I don't know if you want to start with the Astros hitting woes at home or Hunter Brown, but take this and get some of this frustration off your chest.
Yeah, the Astros have been outscored by 16 runs at home this season, which is wild to say.
They're minus 16?
The Astros are minus 16 at home.
Wow.
Which for a team that overall has a run differential that's over 100 in the green and positive is wild to me that a team can perform this drastically differently at home versus on the road. I don't think anybody can really understand it, and my guess would be that this is just one of those oddities in baseball that happens every once in a while, because historically this has been a really, really great home team over the course of this entire dynastic run that they've been on. So I don't know if there's anything that can really be drawn from it other than the fact that given how things have been this season, I want no part of a home series in the playoffs. Keep the Astros on the road at all costs.
You're worried a little 2019 World Series action is going to be in store?
It would help if I turn my microphone
on.
Yeah, where they lost every single home game in that World Series?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I'm multitasking here.
No, I appreciate everything that you do for the show. on and off mic.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is why the tone of the show, where the version of the show where it's, can the Astros wrap up the division over the next eight games, which is still bolded in our rundown for some reason. I was going to be anti that because of literally what happened last night. Of this is not a team that just rips off wins when arguably they're supposed to. They're a team that is, you know, hot for four games, hot for a few games, and then have a WTF performance. And then they have another WTF performance, but in the positive way.
I would agree, but they're playing the A's in their next series. If there's any team...
Did they get swept by the A's last year?
Yeah, but that's last year, B-Mac.
Yeah,
this is a new season.
A team that won the World
Series.
That's
last year's team.
And the A's are even worse this year.
I guess.
So are the Astros.
Yeah. So,
okay, fair.
Yeah.
Don't use logic here, Sean. All right. I'm trying to make an emotional argument.
And they're playing at home, which the Astros are terrible at playing at home.
I mean, you, Sean, you mentioned it there while you're talking. One of the things we were going to talk about is, you know, can the Astros wrap up the division? And Andrew, you alluded to it. So, yeah, I know the answer is no. So they've got two games against the Padres, sub 500 team. You mentioned the A's, Andrew's coming up next. And then the Royals after that, who they also then have another series against, I believe, sandwiched with an Orioles series in between. So the schedule's still favorable, but I almost wish we could have maybe a storm that would come so we could go play our games in at Texas or at Milwaukee like we did in 2007.
I don't think Texas would let us this time either.
Like, there was a time when Bud Selig made the Astros go play in Milwaukee for a series.
Didn't Carlos Zambrano throw like a no-hitter
yes,
in that
he
game?
Did. Yeah. So I don't know if we need to like fake a storm or something.
Brian McDonald out here asking for Hurricane Harvey to come back
doing the
so
rain
the Astros
dance.
Can play on the road.
I mean, I'm willing to make sacrifices for the Astros, Andrew. Clearly, you're not as committed
yeah,
to
sorry,
the Astros.
Yeah, sorry, I don't want 30 inches of water in my home again. My bad,
look,
guys.
We all have to make sacrifices.
Not guys, just Brian. Just Brian.
We all have to make sacrifices.
I will not take that one for the team.
Andrew, clearly. So I guess I'm now going to have a future Mount Rushmore plus one of the positive benefits of a hurricane hitting our city.
Christ.
One of them being the Astros can play on the road where they actually can hit the ball. So, look, it's one game. It feels like we did this a week ago. Oh, my God, they got swept by the Yankees, and then they beat the Rangers by a combined score of 39-10. So I don't want to dive too deep into one loss to the Padres because, I mean, they'll bounce back. I mean, the A's are coming up. The Royals are coming up. I mean, I'm sure they'll have a road series where they can actually play well coming up. But let's dig into who was on the mound last night, who started this nonsense, and then it was furthered by Jose Urquidy. But Hunter Brown he gives up 6 runs last night, and I was looking at this up just before the show, his game log. I mean, obviously we know this goes back further than just a few games, but I looked it up to going back to, I think it was May 31st, because his last like really great start was that start before. So since May 31st, we're talking 16 starts. Hunter Brown has an ERA of, where was it here? It was over 5. I'm losing the number. Anyway, his record is 7-10 over that time. And his ERA, there it is 5.92 going back to his last start in May. Look, I think we all feel great. You know, Verlander's your 1 in the postseason. Framber's your 2 in the postseason. Maybe flip the order. I don't care. I hope that J.P. France is the 3rd starter, although I don't have confidence that Dusty wouldn't reward a veteran like Christian Javier. But you're going to need a 4th starter at some point. Who the hell is the 4th starter on this playoff rotation right now?
I guess.
Is it just like a 3-person piggyback and you try to get 2 innings just from everybody?
Hope the first person doesn't give up 11 runs in the first inning. Yeah. There really is no good answer. There's no answer that you feel like that you can say with the chest that you're like, yeah, Hunter Brown. It's like, Hunter Brown would be my choice, but it's very much hold your nose and pick them kind of thing because I want no part of Christian Javier. Get me off this Christian Javier 2023 experience. No mas. Give me Hunter Brown.
I mean, 590. I mean, 592 ERA. I mean,
get ready to learn bullpen, buddy. All right, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying to Christian Javier, at least for the rest of the season.
Andrew, I mean, do you have an answer for this? So, where if you're Dusty Baker, and I know that's a dangerous set of shoes to put you into, you might have to start bringing banana pudding to different players.
I would not be against that.
And I wouldn't be against it either. Really, Andrew, you can improve your worth on the show if you started bringing Sean and I banana pudding. But what would you do with this 4th spot in the rotation?
I honestly don't have a real answer that I can feel confident about. My guess would be Christian Javier, just because of the fact that he looked half decent for, 4.5 innings, 5 innings against the Yankees, and that's the first time he's looked good for any sustained period of time in a start in 3 months. But the reality is Jose Urquidy is out of the question for me because he's going to get lit up after he gives you more than 2 or 3 innings. Hunter Brown, I understand that the luck has not exactly been in his favor so far this season. I think that his BABIP, batting average and balls in play, is the 2nd highest in the major leagues, and he got absolutely destroyed with some really, really awful luck on some soft contact by the Padres last night. But by and large, even if you look at Hunter Brown's expected stats, and I understand that there's a lot that goes into the expected stats that people don't really enjoy, but even with the bad luck, His expected ERA is still over four. Like, it's not like Hunter Brown's giving up soft contact every which way. Like, the hard hit percent, he's in the 17th percentile for hard hit percentage across all pitchers in Major League Baseball. He is getting barreled up on a relatively consistent basis by a lot of the hitters that he's coming up against. So there's nobody that you can really feel confident in with this Astros rotation. I think it's a pretty clear Verlander / Fromber 1 and 2, you know, throw JP France out there as the number three guy and
pray for rain.
And then other than that, you know, just like, I think BMAC, you legitimately will have to have a bullpen type approach where you're running Jose Urquidy, Christian Javier, and Hunter Brown out there for two or three innings each. And basically, if somebody gets into trouble, well, you got to bring the next guy in.
Yeah, I started off saying it as a joke, but as you were talking there, Andrew, I started to think, like, this is actually the answer. Like, two innings each, and then you go to the actual bullpen guys. And, Andrew, you mentioned, like, the expected stats. ERA since May 31st for Hunter Brown, 592. His FIP is 467, so it is a full run or just over a full run better, but you still don't want to live with a 467.
That's exactly right. Like, even if he's getting unlucky, which he is with how he's pitching so far this season, it's not like that's hindering him to the point where he should have an ERA in the twos or the threes. Like, this guy has still been a relatively mediocre pitcher this season, and I don't want to be too mean to Hunter Brown because, look, this is his rookie season, right? Like,
he only had two starts last year.
The expectations for him were really, really high based upon what we saw from him in flashes last year. But it's not really fair to say, oh, yeah, he should have come in and dominated right away. It's just, we know the stuff that he has and what he's capable of and that he hasn't lived up to those expectations. But, look, he's a rookie, man. These sort of things are going to happen, and you just can't have faith in him running him out there in a playoff rotation. You just can't.
I think as we're talking this out, and I think it sounds like we're in agreement that you can kind of go with the three-person piggyback until you get to the bullpen. I think I'm starting with Javier because at least with Javier and maybe even Urquidy being your first two out, they have had postseason success as a starter, be it last year or Urquidy all the way back in 2019. But at least there's some hope to me that they can figure this out versus Hunter Brown. I mean, his postseason experience is pretty limited. He's a rookie, basically, as you said, Andrew. And speaking to the hype, it is kind of unfair to Hunter Brown because – he would have had hype regardless because he would pitch really well in AAA last year. But I think they didn't do any favors when they started putting the videos of, oh, look at his windup side by side to Justin. You put Justin Verlander on a guy who's had two career starts come into the season. And look, I mean, we would be disappointed with how he's pitched regardless of the comparisons. But, I mean, how could you not be disappointed if you're comparing a guy to Justin Verlander? I mean, what could he possibly do to live up to that?
What? No, he needs to be the greatest pitcher of the generation, and he needs to be that his rookie year, or else get this bum off my... No, it is a classic case of way under unfair expectations put on this guy. And, yeah, I would lean him starting this... Really awful. Now that we're thinking about it, game four for the Houston Astros. I lean for him to start just because he doesn't have that much experience coming out of the pen. Those other guys,
that's true.
While they also have more postseason experience, they also have more experience coming out of the bullpen, warming up,
especially Javier.
Yeah. So that's the only difference. But I do subscribe to the plan of all three of those guys and just kind of ride the hot hand for whoever.
Don't let any of them see a second time through the order.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you give them two innings, you get them one time through the order, and then you move on to the next guy.
Yeah, and to that point, Jose Urquidy has actually looked half decent in his first time through the order in some of these relief appearances that he's made. And that's probably why if we're going to subscribe to this theory that this is what the Astros should do, I would probably lead Urquidy out there, just also because Christian Javier's had a tendency to get absolutely blown up the first inning every time he's been put out there in the last 2 months. So I would say throw Urquidy out there. If he gets through the first nine batters, great. Then throw somebody else out there and just go with that as long as you possibly can. The minute somebody gets in trouble, pull their ass out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got to end the conversation there because next segment on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. And if you want to weigh in on the conversation, anything we're talking about with the Astros, later the Texans as well, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Next up on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, Chaz versus Dusty, round two. We've got talks about Chaz's weight. We've got Chaz talks about Chaz compared to Julio Rodriguez and more. Don't go anywhere in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sweet Sassy Molassie.
Sweet Sassy Molassie. Get out the checkbook and pay grandma for the rubdown as the Spurs beat the Heat.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We've got the game on in the studio, Colorado and Nebraska, Coach Prime. It looks like Colorado might get a score here, but a very Big Ten football going on right now between Colorado and Nebraska, tied at zero with just over 5 minutes to go in the second quarter. It feels like after playing a Big 12 team, Colorado has been dragged down to the depths of hell of the Big Ten West and playing at Nebraska's level here with a 0-0 game getting near halftime.
I think Colorado is just one of those teams where it's, hey, if you want to play a shootout, we can do that. If you want to throw rocks at each other, we can do that. Like, they really, I mean, it's through not even a game and a half, but they seem like they're just like, we're willing to mirror whatever you're doing.
I shout out to Joe George, who got this game at +9 last weekend in favor of Colorado. That's still looking great. He also had Colorado on the money line, which I would still take, but it's start. I'm guessing he's probably sweating it a little bit.
Yeah,
at this point.
You would hope to see a little bit of more out of Shedeur Sanders, a little bit what we saw last week out of him throwing for 500 yards. You would feel bad about this, because this is not the game that Joe George expected to be.
No, happening. And I just said they were about to score a touchdown, and they got stopped on third down, so they might have to kick a field goal here. I mean, if they go into the half up 3-0, Joe has got to be sweating it big time.
Are you guys telling me the Heisman hype for both Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders was a little premature?
I do think that they're not going to be the I now doubt that they'll be the first team to ever have two Heisman Trophy winners on the same team.
That's incredible.
I will say I doubt that. I doubt that.
That's quite
actually,
a
they wouldn't even be the first. They wouldn't be the first. USC did it in 2005.
That's, yeah.
It was different years.
That team didn't actually happen. I think all those years are redacted from the NCAA records. So
all the wins didn't happen.
Yeah.
All right, Mark Emmert, let's move on. Astros Dusty Baker versus Chaz McCormick. Let's get into this. I don't know if we're gonna even have room for all this. And if you do want to weigh in, we'll try to squeeze you in. Call the HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. So there was an article from The Athletic from Chandler Rome, because that's where all Chaz McCormick news comes from, is from Chandler Rome in The Athletic. And look, I think we know what the source of most of Chandler Rome's material is. I don't think we have to really rack our brain to determine who the leak is.
It's people in the Astros organization.
Which Chaz McCormick would be someone in the Astros organization.
He is at least one person.
Of the four that Chandler named in this, well, didn't name, the four that Chandler sourced in this article, you were saying one of those four sources.
One of those four has got to be Chaz McCormick. Chaz McCormick adjacent people.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chaz with a Z, Chaz McCormick. Yeah, and then maybe a Chad McCormick. There's lots.
Chubbs McCormick. Sure.
Yes, and Chubbs McCormick is indeed the fourth. So let's start off with I kind of broke it down into sections because there's so much to digest. And if we have time, we'll hear from Dusty Baker, because he had one hell of a response yesterday before the Astros collapse against the Padres 11-2. Let's start off with Dusty basically making excuses as to why Chaz isn't playing more. And the point he decided to make in this article from Chandler Rome in The Athletic was, for some reason, downgrading his own player compared to another player in the division, which is wild to begin with to me. But he says, and I quote, "It's easy if you got a Julio Rodriguez, you just put him out there in center field." He later on went to say that Chaz McCormick, quote, "isn't a big boy yet. It's hard to be a big boy right out of the gate. What is this, Chad's third or fourth year? The big boys are Altuve, Bregman, Tucker. Those are the big boys. The other boys are approaching big boys," which is very interesting phrasing.
He said the word boys a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of boys in there. So let's start with this Julio thing, because, look, I get it. Julio is one of the brightest young stars in the game. But when you look at Chaz versus Julio, Chaz this year versus Julio this year. Chaz has Julio beaten in average, hasn't beaten on base, hasn't beaten in slugging, hasn't beaten in OPS. And his on pace this year would be, for if Chaz actually played 162 games, would be 34 home runs, 106 RBI. Which, of course, is better than what Julio did last year, which was what Dusty is basing this whole argument off of. So, Sean, I mean, start with the Julio comparisons. I know it's a weird thing from Dusty to say, but kind of start with that. Like, what do you even make of Dusty deciding to go down the road of directly comparing Chaz to Julio Rodriguez and him not being that caliber player as to why he's not playing him?
It like you said, is just completely bizarre to be like, well, you know, he's no Julio Rodriguez, where you can easily look up the numbers, and he's just as good, if not better, than Julio Rodriguez.
I mean, the
Rodriguez.
Numbers would say he's better than Julio.
He just plays a lot less because his manager, for whatever reason, is the one who doesn't believe in him the most. It is really a bizarre situation. That quote almost by itself, like, kind of tells you all you need to know about the situation, what Dusty thinks of Chaz McCormick. The big boys one, it is a very funny quote that I will definitely use going forward, calling people big boys and other boys. And you have to,
approaching big boys.
Approaching big boys. This is Chaz's third or fourth year, so he's not a big boy, but is Yordan a big boy?
So he specifically mentioned Altuve, Bregman, Tucker. How soon were those guys quote-unquote big boys? I'm pretty sure Yordan was damn good year one. Altuve was really good year one, year two. I mean, what is it? And Julio, he's in the, what? He's
year
in,
two.
He's in year two. So Andrew, like, what does he even mean? Like, why couldn't Chaz be a big boy just because he's in year three or four?
I think we're missing the main point here, guys. The fact that, why do you think Chaz is putting on more weight? He's trying to be one of the big boys. Yes. Chaz is trying to physically be one of the big boys.
There we go.
But it is, to me, this to be serious for a second, it speaks to the mentality that Dusty Baker has as a manager, where he seems to be so much more focused upon reputation and profile versus what a player is actually producing in the moment. Like, this, to me, speaks to exactly who Dusty Baker has been throughout his tenure as the Astros manager, where if your reputation says that you are something, even if you're not performing to that reputation, even if it may be over 100-plus game sample size throughout a season, he's still going to fall back upon what your profile and what your reputation says you are versus the player that you actually are in that current moment.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. It shows that Dusty, for whatever reason, whether it be just that he's like, from the Van Gundy mindset of I'm never trusting a rookie, or if he just trusts the guys that he's been playing before, whatever the reason, he is definitely very slow to change his opinion on the player. And so the article goes on to talk about his playing time, and it points out, and this is something that Dusty pointed out in his response yesterday as well, that McCormick had played in 42 of the Astros' 50 games since the All-Star break, which, putting the numbers that way, makes it sound like, oh yeah, Chaz is an everyday player. He's basically taking one game off a week. So but like with a lot of numbers, you can obviously spin and manipulate their meaning and the interpretation of it. Because when you look at Chaz's actual playing time since Michael Brantley returned, because again, some of those numbers, the 42 out of 50 is based on, you know, Altuve being out, on Yordan being out, on Brantley being out. So of course he's going to play them because they need bodies and they got a lot of guys on the injuries list. But since they get Yordan, Altuve, and specifically Brantley back, since that time, which was August 29th, he started the second game of the Boston series, Chaz has played started in only 5 of the 9 games the Astros have played, while Dubon, during that same time, started 6. And it, even in one of the games that of the 5 of 9 that McCormick did start, he got pulled in the 9th inning for John Singleton making a pitch hitting appearance. Where, I mean, we ran down Chaz's number. I'll go ahead and spoil it for you. Singleton ain't hitting nearly the level of Chaz. So this idea that, oh, he is playing every day. No, we were concerned about Yonder Diaz being the guy that got victimized by Brantley's return, but it's been Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, and that pinch hit for Singleton is probably the most curious part of all of this since Brantley's return, because we knew someone was going to be impacted by Uncle Mike coming back. And like you alluded to, B-Mac, we expected it to be Yonder Diaz. In fact, it's been Chaz McCormick. And I don't have a ton of issue with him sitting for Dubon, given how Dubon's played recently, because Dubon's been white hot really over the last couple of weeks. He might have slowed down recently over the last 2 games, but like coming into that Texas series, over the last 2-3 weeks, Dubon's OPS was in the 900s. So it's not like I can fault Dusty for saying, hey, Dubon's hot right now, we're going to throw him out there, we're going to play him in center field. And he has some archaic reasoning for the fact that he thinks Dubon has a stronger arm and that makes him a better center fielder, yada, yada, whatever. But the Singleton pinch hit, to me, that was just like, that's almost offensive to Chaz McCormick, too. To even think that in any scenario, John Singleton, I don't care what chart Dusty is looking at, which he talked about in his post game that Singleton, I think, had a higher expected batting average or like a 27% chance or something versus Chaz's 22% chance to get a hit there. I don't care what numbers you're looking at. There is not a universe where John Singleton is more likely to get a hit against any pitching matchup as compared to Chaz McCormick.
Yeah, and really that is the one where I feel like all plausible deniability where it comes from Dusty not having, I'm not saying just like a bone to pick with Chaz McCormick like it's some sort of like clubhouse issue or just a bone to pick with him as a player. For whatever reason, the person who underrates Chaz McCormick the most is Chaz McCormick's own manager, and the Singleton pinch hit is like where this all like, I mean, he can sit here and say like, oh, I don't have a problem. You think I have a problem with his weight? I bring him a banana pudding every day. And like, sure, whatever. His actions speak so much louder than his words when it comes to Dusty Baker.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, furthering the context of being pinch hit for John Singleton, that came in the Yankee series where he didn't start the other two games of that same series. So yeah, the only start in that three-game series against the Yankees is the game in which he gets pulled by John Singleton.
Arguably the most like offensive treatment that he's gotten the entire series. Never mind not being benched. No, it's somehow worse. It's somehow worse to let him play and then to pull him for a much worse hitter.
All right, so we're going to get to break now. I want to carry over some of the Astros conversation. We'll try to get to the Dusty audio as well and talk about what Andrew alluded to and Will Sean as well. I think all three of us at some point. Apparently, Chaz's weight's a problem and there's banana pudding involved, which instantly makes me want to work for the Houston Astros. If banana pudding is involved, then maybe I need to find a job with the Houston Astros. Well, we'll get into that conversation next and we'll squeeze in some Texans as well. If you have a thought on it, give us a call on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-376. 3776 is the Bullpen on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pitter patter.
Well, pitter patter, let's get at her.
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 is the Bullpen with the producers here of ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, Andrew Carlson, myself, Brian McDonald, and our man Josh Evans behind the glass. We're going to get more into the Astros right here, and specifically banana pudding is what we're leading this segment with here. I mean, I've been wanting to talk about banana pudding all day, and we'll get some Texans in here before the segment is over. So carrying over the Chaz McCormick, Dusty Baker conversation from the last segment, breaking down what was said in the article by Chandler Rome from The Athletic, we got into kind of the, for some reason, Dusty comparing Chaz directly to Julio Rodriguez, another player in their own division. Very weird. We're talking about how they're trying to defend the fact that, oh, he's actually playing a lot when you look at, you know, since Brantley's return, he's not playing a whole lot, only 5 out of 9. And so the question then goes to, like, why is he not playing a lot? Why is he comparing other players or Chaz to other players, maybe downgrading his own player? And the popular thought, according to this article from Chandler Rome, is that Dusty Baker has a problem with Chaz McCormick's weight. So from this article, apparently 4 people with knowledge of the team's inner workings said that Chaz McCormick's weight, listed as 208 last year, apparently playing right now at 220, has become a talking point for Baker. Asked on Wednesday whether McCormick's weight is a concern for him, Baker replied, no, why would you even ask that? He then went on to talk before the game yesterday against the Padres and brought up the fact that, oh, I bring him banana pudding, you know, once a week. If I had a problem with his weight, then, you know, why would I do that? And it's just, it's so funny because I guess I could see, because in this article they're bringing up like sprint speed, and look, he's a center fielder, so if he did get fat and he was a lot slower, that would be a concern. But when they show the difference between the sprint speeds, it's really not all that different, and it almost feels like and Chaz talks about it in this article about how he's decided to put on some of the weight because he feels stronger that way. He feels healthier. Kind of like we see that every year in the NFL where wide receivers will put on weight because they feel like they can endure the rigors of the season. better with a few with a little bit more muscle and a little bit more weight on their bodies. So I don't see why it would, especially I can't see why it's an issue when you look at his stat line. It's like
if whatever he's doing is
right.
Worth,
like exactly. If he was playing poorly, like, oh man, he's put on weight and now his, you know, everything's dropping off. Maybe he's a little bit slower or whatever. But his offensive numbers have exploded. I haven't noticed a drop off in his defense ability. So if this is the reason Dusty doesn't like Chaz is because he quote unquote got fat, it might be the dumbest reason ever. But what do you make of this whole banana pudding thing, Sean?
I mean, I think it's hilarious.
And delicious.
Because I ultimately I land on the side. I actually this is where I'm Team Dusty here.
Uh-oh.
No, I just in the fact that I don't think that Dusty really cares about his weight that much
because he brings the banana pudding, Sean.
Yeah, because of the banana pudding. I just think Dusty Baker doesn't think he's a good baseball player for whatever reason. I think it's somehow something that Dusty Baker sees in Chaz McCormick that knocks him down a peg in like the hierarchy of this team of who should be in the lineup. I don't think it's weight related whatsoever, but I am glad to know that Chaz McCormick also is a big fan of banana pudding like myself.
Banana pudding might be my favorite dessert.
It is
definitely top three. But it feels like Dusty, throughout this season, like every time a comment comes up about why Chaz isn't playing, there's some like either new reason he gives, like, oh, he doesn't hit, you know, right-handers well, or he's not as fast as Jake Myers. There's always some it feels like the goalpost keeps moving a little bit, Andrew. And one of the things, we're not going to get to the audio here that Dusty had yesterday, but one of the things he said is kind of in his excuse-making tour yesterday for why he wasn't playing Chaz McCormick was like, oh, you know, I came to him and said, like, hey, I'm going to let you win this job, but then he got hurt. And, you know, but, you know, I'll let you win this job, but I'm not just going to hand it to you. You got to earn it. Like, you look at his stat line, I get the idea, because we'll talk about the Texans in a second. They made C.J. Stroud, quote, unquote, earn the job. They didn't give it to him right away. But doesn't the stat line earn Chaz McCormick the job?
You would think so. But I agree with Sean. Like, the reasons for why Chaz is playing, I think it simply boils down to Sean's 100% right. That, like,
thank you.
Dusty, just for whatever reason, does not like him, maybe as a person or as a player. Like, there is something going on behind the scenes from where Dusty does not vibe with the baseball player that is Chaz McCormick, and it doesn't make any sense to the eye test and what we see on the field. And Dusty can't just come out to the media directly and say, hey, yeah, you know what? I just don't mess with Chaz. Like that would make zero sense for a manager to do, and he's obviously not going to do that behind the scenes either. So my guess would be that this leads to a player who is sort of grasping at straws and trying to find reasons as to why he's not playing, because logically it just doesn't make any damn sense. So my hope is that this all blows over by the time we hit the postseason, because guess what happened last year? We had similar conversations about, oh, who needs to be playing more? And guess what happened when we got to the postseason? We saw the Astros' best lineup on a much, much more consistent basis. Once we got into the postseason, this whole personal center field of garbage got thrown out like it should be. So my anticipation would be once we hit the postseason, we're going to be seeing a lot more of Chaz McCormick on a much more consistent basis, just like we did last year. But until we get to that point, the hand-wringing is going to continue.
Absolutely. So let's end the conversation there on Chaz McCormick, because I agree with your last point there, Andrew. I do think there's a pretty good chance that once they get to the postseason, everything we wring our hands about weekly with the lineup and who's playing and who's not gets itself sorted out. So moving on to the Texans, week one is this Sunday, tomorrow. They're going to Baltimore to face the Ravens. I believe 9.5-point underdogs last I saw, maybe 10 points in some places. So no one's expecting, obviously, the Texans to win. They've got injuries all across their offensive line. They got injuries in the secondary with Jimmy Ward being out. They've got linebackers missing from this game. And plus, have a rookie quarterback starting on the road against the Baltimore Ravens. So no one expects the Texans to win this game, or should they? But what would you consider a success against Baltimore? Obviously, you can't say with a straight face, I expect them to win. But if, Sean, you saw this against the Baltimore Ravens, what would you consider a success, even if the Texans don't pull off the upset?
C.J. Stroud walking off the field on his own, under his own power.
Not getting carted off?
Yes. This will be a true test of they knock you down 9 times and you get up 9 times. That's what I'm looking for C.J. Stroud. to have a little bit of Matt Saracen in them and from Friday Night Lights.
Man, you lost me with that one.
You've never seen Friday Night
Lights? No, I haven't seen Friday Night Lights.
Is he
a player on the team or is that the name?
Okay. He's a quarterback. I'll explain Friday Night Lights to you in the break. Yeah.
Maybe just we should do that off the air.
A lot of our listeners just nodded along in their head. Sure. Yeah, Matt Saracen. Got it. I think it really is going to come down to can this offense move the ball whatsoever without most of their offensive line, or without at least the other good offensive line, the bankable offensive lineman, the one who just got a new deal, Tytus Howard. Can this offense do anything? Can C.J. Stroud operate within this offense with we thought he was going to have one arm tied behind his back without that kind of go-to receiver on this roster. He might have one hand behind his back and then another hand tied behind his back with the offensive line that's rolling out tomorrow in Baltimore. So that is what I'm watching for. And I will be grading on a curve. I'm not going to say, hey, go look like Pat Mahomes out there. But what can he do with...
Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, I never... Loser. no, but what can he do? What can he do out there in adverse situation?
As you were talking there, I started thinking about, like, because there's a lot of comparisons right now to where the Texans are to where the Astros were at the beginning of the season in kind of a weird way. I mean, everyone expected the strength of the Astros were team to be, oh, my God, they've got six starters, half of them get hurt, like, right as the season starts. Same thing with the Texans. Oh, the offensive line, the strength of this team. All of a sudden, Tytus Howard's out. You lose Juice Scruggs. You lose Kenyon Martin for the season. So there's
Kenyon Green.
What did I say?
Kenyon Martin.
Don't have him either.
Yeah, no, you don't have Kenyon Martin. Wrong sport.
No Kmart out there.
I'll take an L on that one. I mean, Sean kind of gave what he would be excited for, what would give him hope outside of a Texans win. What besides, and I'll take Stroud, you know, actually looking great off the table because I think that's the obvious number one choice.
Yeah, reasonable.
Yeah, well, that's the number one choice. But besides Stroud looking really good against Baltimore, what would fire you up the most coming out of this Baltimore game, even if they lose?
Yeah, so for the C.J. Stroud piece of the conversation, just looked not overmatched. Like, that's given all of the deficiencies that the Texans currently have between the wide receiver core, what's going on with the offensive line, if he goes out there and looks like he belongs in the NFL week one, which I think is a very, very tough ask already given – like the things that I just mentioned, and like we saw Pat Mahomes look have some issues with the wide receiver core he was dealing with Travis Kelce out, and it's like that's the best quarterback in the league, right? And the fact that the Chiefs struggled to move the ball at moments, having the best quarterback in all of the NFL, given the problems they're having on the outside with their pass catchers, to come in and expect C.J. Stroud to do really anything of significant note tomorrow, I think would be asking a little bit much. But if he goes out there and he looks like he at least belongs as an NFL quarterback in week one, I'm not going to knock him if he doesn't, frankly, just because of the situation. But if he does, I think that's an incredibly positive sign. And on the defensive end, hey, let's see a little bit of this pass rush and the defensive line that has been revamped over this offseason. And the secondary, the fact that we have more depth in the secondary as the Texans than really at any point in the last three or four seasons. So all of a sudden, you've got a defense that supposedly has some level of talent on it. D'Amico Ryan's a defensive head coach. He's going to be calling the plays. I'm not expecting them to bottle up Lamar or anything like that, but hey, let's at least see some progress to where the run defense isn't a total sieve, like where you can actually stop someone on an occasion or two here or there. And honestly, what this all boils down to, BMAC, is if they cover that 9.5-point spread, I would think I would be genuinely impressed because personally, I don't expect them to.
Yeah, I think that is, it's a little bit of like, that's the simplest answer is cover the spread, but that is the right, is the right answer. Because if they cover the spread, they are doing some of those things. And you touched on the safety or the secondary matchup or the Texas secondary matching up against those weapons that Baltimore has for Lamar. They're some new-look weapons, Zay Flowers, well, not Odell Beckham, but
Rashad Bateman.
We'll see about Mark Andrews. That, to me, is like a very – that's something where
– especially for Stingley. Want to see Stingley go and take one of those guys, not shut him down. He's not Darrelle Revis, but you want to see him slow him down.
Yeah, not get – I mean, honestly, against Zay Flowers, like he should beat Zay Flowers. Like he – because Zay Flowers is a rookie at making
first
his
game,
first start.
Yeah.
In a new offense, too. Not just a new offense for Zay Flowers, a new offense for everybody. And so I think that is a very real thing where we can measure where the Texans are at based on what is supposed to be a strength of this team that isn't completely decimated by injuries, just Jimmy Ward, I guess. But that is something where how they look in the secondary is something that we can carry forward and look at going forward in for the rest of this Texan season.
Yeah, one more thing, BMAC, that I want to look at before we hit this break here, too, is how is D'Amico Ryans going to handle the dual responsibility of being the head coach and also now the defensive play caller? This is a new role for him in terms of what he's going to have to do as the head coach from a time management perspective and everything else that comes along with being the ultimate decision maker for a team. And we've talked about this with Josh and the Who a little bit over the past couple of weeks, where I don't know if I'm the biggest fan of D'Amico Ryans calling the defensive plays, just because as a rookie head coach, I want him to figure out and sort out all of his responsibilities that comes with being a head coach first versus also adding more onto his plate already with calling the defensive plays. So I would like to see D'Amico do a competent job from a just head coach perspective in terms of how's the clock management, how is he doing with his timeouts and all of those sort of little things. And if he's able to do that while also calling defensive plays and doing that at a relatively high level, or what we can observe at a relatively high level, then I think I would be very, very satisfied with whatever happens in this week one game.
That is a really good point, Andrew, because once upon a time I wrote for Bleacher Report covering the Texans, and I spent a good amount of my week writing about all the game management blunders that Bill O'Brien had every week in 2014 and 2015. And it used to drive me crazy, his treatment of the timeouts, his decision to punt or kick a field goal versus go for it. So it's interesting, because I think when you have a coach with a superpower on one side of the ball, you want them to use that superpower.
Exactly.
Like D'Amico Ryans isn't a CEO type coach like Mack Brown was at Texas. Like, I didn't care if Mack Brown ever called plays. That wasn't his specialty. He was a CEO type coach. Whereas D'Amico, we know, is an elite level play caller. So I want him to use his play calling, but if we do notice him start to have clock management issues, game management issues, then obviously we'll have to have that conversation about dialing him back. So besides the actual score of the game and how C.J. Stroud looks, I do definitely want to see how D'Amico Ryans handles the game, because we did see that, and I think it was the Miami game where he had a blunder there where they had the delay of game on that goal line series, and people were giving him we're a little concerned about his game management in that situation. All right, coming up on the other side of the break, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, we'll get more into Texans Ravens and also our Survivor picks. Who are we most confident in winning this week? And we'll unveil the punishment for the people who get knocked out early. That and more in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of Odin Finch.
Odin Finch!
I'm Odin Finch.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security! That's them right there. Right there.
Thanks for that, Spencer. Always appreciate that rejoin when we come back in the show. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. The bullpen here with the producers of ESPN Radio, Brian McDonald, Andrew Carlson, Sean Mapes, and our man behind the glass, Josh Chavans. Right now, continuing the Texans conversation, of course, they're in Baltimore tomorrow to face the Ravens in week one of the NFL season. And I wanted to get you guys' opinions on some of more of the season-long questions for the Houston Texans. And we'll start with the very basic question that I think everyone does in sports radio at this time of the year. Sean, what is your prediction for the Texans' win-loss record this season?
They're over-under, I believe, the last...
Six and a half. Yeah.
Great number.
It's a great number. Yeah.
It's a great number.
My number is right along there.
And I'm going to go under.
Oh, six.
Yeah.
6-11.
I think 6-11 is probably the most, I don't want to say most likely outcome, but that is one where I can definitely see that happening. You know, 7, that's going to take a lot of, and especially with game one, they kind of have that shot.
Yeah, you're already basically marking one off the
so
list.
So I think 6 is I think six you can feel good about, and it's like a reasonable number.
Well, I'll go next because, like I said, my number is right along that 6.5 as well. Because I actually did. We did win loss predictions on late hits the other day, and I had them at 7-10 when they were going through the schedule. there definitely could be, like, part of what we talked about is kind of like their window. I could see them falling down to like 5 games. Like, if things went wrong, I could see them, if everything went right, maybe winning 8 games. So I basically tried to just settle right into the middle of that, because I don't think everything will go right, because it already isn't with the state of this offensive line. So I put them at 7-10. Andrew, where do you have the Texans this year?
Yeah, I don't want to be lame and just basically copy what you guys have done here.
No, we're smart. We're right. So.
But you guys are correct. And like, I don't really see any way that this team falls out of the 5-8 win range, because ideally, and I think we all believe that this team is significantly better coached than they have been at any point in the last couple of years. Yeah. There's more talent on the roster. I don't see them really falling below 5 wins with that being the case. But at the same time, even if everything goes right, given the injuries that we've already seen sort of accrue on the offensive line, like, why are we I don't see a realistic path to go from that to more than 8 wins. So that being the case, I'm going to go with 6-10, and then we're going to throw a tie in there just to be a little different. They're going to go 6-10-1. There's going to be a tie in there, maybe to the Indianapolis Colts. I don't know how it's going to happen or how it's going to break down.
I was going to ask, who are they tying against? Don't say the Colts, but
it's going to be the Colts because you know they're equally crappy. And they also have a rookie quarterback, so you know what?
Actually, that's fair. They are equally crappy. They might be. The Colts might be more crappy, but I mean, I don't want to get into who's crappier argument. The Texans or the Colts? That's not a fun conversation to have. So let's get into a couple more Texans season long stat projections, and then we'll get into our survivor picks here to finish off the segment. Leading receiver. I think there's a lot of, like, who the hell is the Texans' number one receiver? Is it Robert Woods? Is it Nico Collins? Is it not a wide receiver because it's Dalton Schultz? Sean, who is the leading receiver at season's end here for the Houston Texans?
You just said his name, Dalton Schultz. I think he is going to be – he is the most reliable – like, going into the season, he is going to be the most reliable option for C.J. Stroud. This is a San Francisco style offense that will highlight the tight ends, and so I think Dalton Schultz. Maybe, I mean, the yards is going to kind of be tough because, you know, Tank Dell can just take a couple long ones. You know, there's going to be more like deep shot, big play threats. But I think as far as like their best actual receiver, the best weapon that they have passing the football is going to be Dalton Schultz.
I'm going to buy into Mr. Training Camp, Mr. Preseason. I'm actually going to say Nico Collins.
I thought about it, and I didn't want to do it.
I know. I'm going to go out on the ledge. I'm going to go out on the ledge and take a little bit of risk here. I really liked, this is the ultimate small sample size argument, but I really liked.
Look great in the preseason?
Well, yes, but specifically drive two against the Dolphins. I'm talking one drive, Sean. Look, because really, of the entire preseason, And it's impossible to know until we actually see what their offense looks like in the regular season. But that, to me, was the only time they actually ran an offense that looks like a regular season offense. Like, they didn't try to do much. They're pretty vanilla through most of the preseason. But in that second drive for the Dolphins, it actually looked like they were doing the motion and some of the fakes and misdirection. And in that drive, Nico Collins looks pretty good, and he was involved in a lot of the misdirection as well. So I think that, to me, that showed me that maybe Bobby Slowick has decided Nico Collins is the guy I want to get involved. He's our go-to. And so for that reason, I will go with Nico Collins. Who is your answer? Probably go Cougs. Is that your answer, Andrew?
It was going to be Nico Collins, but to give it some level of variety, I think Nico Collins will end up being their leading receiver in terms of yardage at the end of the year. But in terms of who people are most impressed with by the end of the season, I believe it's going to be Tank Dell. I believe Tank Dell will end up being the best receiver from a talent standpoint, or regarded as the best receiver on the team from a talent standpoint, by the time we hit the end of the season. It's just going to take him a little bit of time to get acclimated to the league and the physicality that it brings. So maybe the first half of the year isn't as productive as you would like from Tank Dell, but I expect him to have a relatively strong second half of the season.
All right, real quickly, just give your number. How many sacks does Will Anderson get, Sean?
8.5.
7.5.
I'll go 9. I'll be on the high side there.
Battle red tinted glasses.
I mean, if we were throwing darts at a dartboard, all darts were all very clumped together. Yeah. I mean, both in Will Anderson and with the season record. All right, let's finish off this segment right now with our survivor picks. Each week until we're all out and then maybe we'll transition into something else. But we will give you who our survivor pick is this week. We will run a competition amongst ourselves. So same survivor's rule. Survivor Rules is your normal pool. One loss and you're out, and you can only use the team once. A little wrinkle here, though, for this show, we will issue out a punishment each time someone is eliminated. The person who gets eliminated will have their Mount Rushmore plus one topic for the following week picked by the people who did not get eliminated.
The topic so, will be.
The well, topic, yeah.
We still or the loser will still have
Yeah,
agency,
you will still
though.
Have freedom to okay. fill it out as you want, but we'll give you a topic. All right, so I'll go ahead and start off first, and we'll need to keep this short. But my survivor pick for this week is the Vikings, who are at home against Tampa and Baker Mayfield. I think that's the end of the explanation. It's Baker Mayfield. I'm taking the Vikings at home.
I'm going to go with the Ravens at home versus the Texans.
Hater.
Boo!
I'm sorry that I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid like B-Mac over here, but I don't really see.
I mean, I did say they would lose.
I don't really see any pathway for the Texans to win in this game. Do I see a pathway to moral victories? Absolutely. But that doesn't count in a survivor pool, so give me the Ravens.
Can we do should, survivor we pool should. Moral victories? That is a great idea.
When we're all eliminated, that's what it
that
puts
That is
us
what
to.
We're doing. Yes, 100%.
My pick's going to be the Broncos over the Raiders. Anytime you get to pick against Josh McDaniels as a head coach, you got to do it.
You're picking with Russ, though. That is a bold move.
I'm picking Sean Payton.
Oh, all right.
Sean's got to stick together, man.
We do. Now more than ever. Josh,
who is your survivor pick this week?
I mean, we kind of said it already. I'm picking the Jaguars to defeat the crappy Colts.
Hey, there we go.
And a crap off. The Colts would definitely win that matchup.
Chris Angel is going to be performing, I think, before the game in Indianapolis. Does that change your thinking whatsoever? Mind freak.
Not one bit.
Okay.
Apparently, he's going to do some bit.
Just want to make sure you had all the info.
He's going to be falling from the ceiling in chains, and he's got, I don't know. It
sounds like something Jim Irsay. It's going to be a mind freak.
It sounds like something Jim Irsay came up with on while under maybe a substance or two.
Mount Rushmore plus one coming up next on the bullpen. Brian McDonald just got fired. I'm Sean Mapes. That's Andrew Carlson. Back after this.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. We control the spice.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.